Coming up on another exciting installment of That Was a Show. Saved by the Bell, The College Years was a show. This 1993 sequel picks up right where the original series left off. Zack, Slater, and Screech move into a dorm at California University. With age comes wisdom, and they're finally ready to give up the childish schemes and antics, buckle down, and take their education seriously. Just kidding. Bryn, Aaron, and Barry crack the books and study why this extension of the massively successful franchise lasted a mere 19 episodes. They also watch and review the new Saved by the Bell 2020 reboot series, and oh, how the times have changed. Cold open. We grew up during peak sitcom, Seinfeld, Friends, The Fresh Prince, but those shows were diamonds in the rough. This podcast is not about those diamonds. It's about the rough. Some sitcoms were briefly popular in their time. Some were canceled almost immediately. You probably won't recognize most of these, and you'll ask, that was a show?
That was a show?
The podcast about failed or forgotten sitcoms from the 80s and 90s, starring
Bryn Burney,
Aaron Yeager,
and Andrew Helmer as Barry.
A Radio Gizmo production.
Hello, folks. How's everybody doing this week?
We're fantastic.
Well, fantastic is a strong word.
Yeah.
We're doing okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a quick downplay.
Yeah, Aaron, usually
you really downgraded it.
You're usually the more upbeat one of the two of us.
We're doing stupendous.
Well, as you can no doubt tell in my voice, I am a 35-year-old man who forgot that he cannot drink like a teenager anymore. and I feel pretty close to death today after finally getting to see some friends for a very long time,
So Aaron and I would normally have gone on this little expedition, but we had other plans. So Aaron and I are very bright and bushy tailed. So
and I am not.
Yeah.
So to everyone listening out there, consider this a PSA, if you will, for responsible alcohol consumption over the age of 30. If you're
Agreed.
Under 30, just know it turns a corner.
I think that that's a pretty good segue into the show that we're talking about today.
Yeah,
it is.
What did we watch, guys?
Okay, well, we watched Saved by the Bell, The College Years, and
we sure did.
We're also going to talk a little bit about the Saved by the Bell 2020 reboot after as well. So
yeah.
Shall I kick things off with
kick us off?
Is everyone ready for one of Aaron's classic long and overwritten show descriptions?
Buckle up.
How could you have possibly done a long description for Saved by the Bell, The College Years?
Well, too bad. All right, here we go. The original Saved by the Bell ran for 4 years, five if you count its predecessor under the name Good Morning, Miss Bliss, from which it was actually a retooling. 4 or 5 years may not seem that successful for a sitcom, but this show played furiously in syndication and had a significant impact on the teenage zeitgeist for years to come. Saved by the Bell, The College Years, though technically classified as a spin-off, is really more of a direct sequel. It picks up right where the original show left off, with the students from Bayside High going off to college at the generic-sounding California University. Mark Paul Gosselaar is back as Zach Morris. Mario Lopez, of course, as A.C. Slater, and Dustin Diamond as Samuel Screech Powers. We watched the first episode, the pilot, and episode 19, which was the last one that was made. In the pilot, Zach opens the show with one of his classic speeches directly to camera, a hallmark of the franchise, and he's excited to be moving into a co-ed dorm where he thinks he's going to be sharing a bedroom with two girls. Leslie Burke, played by Anne Tremco, and Alex Tabor, played by Kirsten Warren. Of course he's mistaken, and he is in fact going to be rooming with, you guessed it, Slater and Screech. The pilot also sets up one of the key antagonists to their youthful hijinks, Mr. Rogers, Mike Rogers, who is their resident advisor, played in a particularly contrived move by former football player Bob Golic. The actual third resident in the girls' dorm is Danielle Marks, played by Essence Atkins, who was written out of the show after the pilot to bring back Tiffany Amber Thiessen as Kelly Kapowski, because the show couldn't possibly have four girls, and they apparently had to replace the one black character. Zach throws a birthday party for Leslie with just enough background performers from central casting to make it look like a rager. And they get in big trouble with Mr. Rogers. Zach graciously takes the blame for the party and manages to orchestrate one of his classic schemes to get them all out of trouble, thus setting up a will they or won't they between the two. I'll describe episode 19 later when we get to it. So there you go.
You know, Aaron, you did a pretty good job. You were under 5 minutes for that. So there we congratulations.
Go, nice.
So Saved by the Bell, the college years. Why did this need to happen?
Yeah, that's a pretty good question that nobody seems willing to answer on the show, because it really just coasts by on existing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know like where to start. Like the whole thing is very, very contrived. From the fact that they all end up at the same college. Did they explain where Lisa Turtle ended up? Like, I know she pops in later, which we'll get into.
I don't think they did. Maybe eventually they explain.
Yeah.
But,
and I assume Jesse Spano ends up at like an Ivy League or something like that.
Yes, as we found out in the reboot.
Yeah, oh, right.
She was getting her PhD, and also I guess using context from the reboot, I guess Lisa must have gone to school for fashion design,
which is on brand.
Like.
That's like what the character always wanted to do. Yeah.
I should say this right off the bat. This will be my biggest weird confession since we did the John Larroquette show. I never watched a single complete episode of Saved by the Bell as a kid.
What?
To this day, I have never watched one episode all the way from beginning to end of Saved by the Bell, apart from the episodes of these series that we watched for today's podcast.
Aaron, I'm really shaken. How is it that we've been married for 2 years and I don't know this about you?
I've specifically saved this until we started recording the podcast episode how you'd react.
I don't know how to react to that. I've seen like every episode of every version of this dumb show.
The only explanation I can give, because it was very popular amongst my friends, is that I was a classic New York lonely boy. I don't know if you'll get that reference, Barry.
Have you seen Girls 5 Eva? Okay, just look up the music video when we're done this. Anyone out there who's seen the amazing Girls 5 Eva series, which is a Peacock original, it's a little fun little Easter egg in that show. It describes the
childhood of an only child.
Who's a boy.
When raised in the right kind of big city environment. Though I wasn't lonely.
Aaron was
a lot of the traits that they joke about line up.
Yeah. Aaron was the suburban Toronto version of the New York lonely boy.
Yeah. So what that means in this context is that from a quite young age, I gravitated toward shows that would have appealed to much older people. So when I was like 10 or 12, I was watching shows like Mad About You. I wasn't watching Saved by the Bell for some reason.
I mean, for me, I'm sure this applies to Barry as well. Like Saved by the Bell was just shoved in our faces. It was on. It was just played constantly. Like all the different versions of Saved by the Bell were played on multiple stations, like in reruns, constantly.
And so I caught snippets of it constantly because I'd be watching a lot of TV and it would pop on. But when it would come on, I'd watch for like 30 seconds and then change the channel. I just never got into it.
It's definitely a thing that, like, I don't know if any of us genuinely really liked it as a kid. It just was like comfort food. It was just like this weird thing that, you know, when we were little, I think it seemed kind of cool. But then once you got to a certain age, you were like, oh boy. And you just kind of watched it. Not ironically, but you watched it because it was like part of your childhood, part of the fabric of your your youth. Yeah.
I mean, weirdly, in a way, I guess I also had an aversion to the way that high school kids were often portrayed in TV shows and movies as having very specific cliques and archetypes that didn't sort of add up from my school experience. And so I always just saw those shows and thought, like, why are they trying to force this image of high school down my throat? Yeah. And like, yeah, it just never clicked with me.
Yeah, I mean, it's silly. And definitely this version of it where they move on to the next stage of life, college, it's also contrived and not realistic to most people's college experiences.
No.
Like, it's way too squeaky clean. And
yeah. So I guess, like, do you even know that, like, Zach has, like, a superpower, Aaron?
I know that he can freeze time or something, right?
He can freeze time.
But it's not, like, called out in the same way that, like, Evie from Out of This World. It's just more of a weird, it's just, like, more of a device. It's more of a storytelling device. It's not, like, an actual...
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
I guess let's get into talking about this pilot.
Yeah.
What did you each think of this masterpiece?
It was, you know, it's exactly what I remembered. Even when I was a kid, I liked Saved by the Bell, but as a kid, I remember not liking College Years. And it's weird. I forgot that, like, it's most of the cast. For some reason I thought they lost, like, everyone except for, like, Mark Paul Gosselaar, Mario Lopez, but I was wrong.
Screech was very much there.
Screech is such a terrible character, and, like,
yeah, it's worth noting that it felt like his character was almost deliberately underwritten in this College Years show.
No, that's Screech. That's Screech powers and all his and all his glory.
I mean, he was always, like, a really annoying character, but it feels like Aaron and I were, like, chatting a bit about it before we started recording about how it almost feels like the writers were trolling Screech. Like they were writing specific lines that were just so dumb.
Yeah, like jokes that were just so impossible to land.
Yeah, it was like everything that came out of his mouth that was supposed to be a punchline was so cringy and so, like, it was just all groans. Yeah. Like, it was all just like,
the best
ugh.
Example for this was in episode 19, so I'll save this for later.
Yeah, but I don't know. So some of the things that I found kind of funny is, like, they definitely were trying to set up a new vibe for this series. Like, they definitely ditched a lot of the sort of, like, color palette and, imagery from, like, the original high school series. Like, instead of bright, really bright colors, like neon colors and, like, you know, basically the color palette of the original series was the colors of the Max, which were, like, all these crazy, silly colors. And then they move to the College Years, and all you see is, like, basically all of those weird muted pastels that were, like, all of the clothes from the Gap in the 90s.
Yeah, like, pretty realistic, probably, to what you would have seen at the time.
Yeah, but it was still a little too squeaky clean. Like, think about how cool it would have been to be in college in the 90s. Like, you know, it would be like, I'm picturing more grunge rock types and, you know, like that whole scene,
right?
And, like, the girls dressed like Courtney Love, you know, and, you know, you see a little bit of that with Kelly Kapowski when she comes back later. Like, it's a little funny because, like, in the original series, Kelly Kapowski is very much your sort of all-American girl who's dressed in, like, pastel colors and has these, like, big feathered bangs. And then It's basically one of these things where she drops the middle name. Like, you know, she's no longer Tiffany Amber Thiessen. She's just Tiffany Thiessen for the college years. And she gets this weird kind of like hot, edgy girl glow up. Like, she's no longer wearing like acid wash jeans and like lilac purple sweaters. Now it's all like these like, you know, jeans and like black tops and like, you know, she has a Rachel hairstyle, mm-hmm. like the Rachel haircut. Like, it's just like a very different vibe, but she's still very bubbly and perky, and she's still the you know, nice girl, but she's dressed in a way that is like, oh, I'm the chic, cool college girl. So I don't know. It's like a really mm-hmm. weird thing. They were trying to like, I don't know. They were like, this is what college kids are like, right? But I guess that's what Saved by the Bell, the original series, was too. It was like, this is what high school kids are like, right?
Well, it's funny because like, I feel like the show, and like obviously the reboot addresses this in huge ways, but I feel like the original show did know that it was a bit of a heightened reality. And that it wasn't quite the real world. Whereas I feel like the college years ditches that completely, where I think in the college years, they're really trying to make it seem like this is how things
really
are. So
maybe that's one of the failings of it compared to the original series, was that they didn't lean into that surreal.
It doesn't lean into the campiness.
Yeah.
It just, there's something about it that like falls flat because it's like trying to be too grounded. I don't know. And then did you find there were some really sort of dark jokes that were delivered in the like kind of.
Both of them come in the 19th episode. There was a suicide joke and a funeral joke. And to be fair, they were both like.
Yeah.
They were both really funny. And I was like,
but it's jarring the way that they're delivered and the editing, like it's all like very jarring and weird and out of place.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so you're trying to like take this version of the series in a different direction, but they don't go all the way with it. It's only sort of like half there. I don't know.
Yeah, it is not as wholesome at all as the
original. They should have gone full on edgy then. You know what I mean?
So there was one joke, I don't know if this is quite edgy, but there was one joke that I kind of liked that this kind of ties into something we were discussing when we reviewed Top of the Heap, but it was like a line from Zach where he's talking about what he's there to study. And he's talking about studying investment banking or finance and says a line about like, but all my heroes are in jail. And I had to laugh. And then I realized like 1993, this is like during that period that you guys were suggesting, maybe there was like a turn against the sort of 80s TV show pro-capitalism sort of movement into that like, into the late 80s and early 90s when it was a lot of commentary against those types of like finance and investment banking types of things.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Zach Morris sort of comes across as like out of touch for such a young guy.
He does. He really does. And like a lot of the pilot is sort of Zach kind of repeatedly learning that like, you know, he's definitely not cool.
Yeah. And it's like, and I love that concept. Like, I love the fact that he and like Slater are sort of taken down a peg. But it's just not in a way that's like clever enough for it to really like hit, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this was a deliberate commentary, but it almost comes across like what they're trying to say is all of these characters are people who peaked in high school. And now they're on like the downhill slope of what comes next. But I don't know if they were actually trying to say that, but that's how it starts to come across.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah,
question
for sure.
About the set design. It felt like the common area of their dorm was basically like a typical family sitcom living room, but dressed to look like a dorm.
Yeah, it was weird. The one thing I will point out about that particular set is there is this throw blanket that I was obsessed with that everybody had in the 90s. Like, it was like this navy blue thing with this kind of weird celestial, like, design on it. It had like a sun that's like a very particular aesthetic. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, that is so of that time. That is so like 1993. And I was like obsessed with it. I was like, yeah. Oh my God, like just show that throw blanket all the time. Like that's just like,
yeah. Well, and the couch they had was gorgeous too. It was like this beautiful like mid-century piece, and you're just like, the fuck
and
is
it's
this
like
doing
normally
here?
I would say, you know, college dorms on TV shows are so unrealistic, like they're always so big. But I think there are some dorms that are like that. It's just like most are not. Like
yeah, and in real life, the furniture in dorms
is gross,
the kind of material that you could hose down like an animal cage at the circus.
I mean, as it should be.
It's not like real adult furniture. It's like that really hard fabric and like...
And this is coming from three people who didn't have that experience of like living in dorms.
No, I spent a lot of time visiting friends in dorms. So
yeah.
I've seen dorms.
A fair amount. Like, I think about like, the dorms where we went to school, Barry, like a couple of our friends that lived in them, they were like very depressing.
Very small and very depressing.
And those like painted cinder block walls, like a school gym.
Yes, like a school gym. And then you just like plaster posters all over them.
Yeah.
There was a plot point in the pilot that I wanted to point out just because it was so stupid. I couldn't believe how lazy it was, where it was just like one of the plot points was like the girls want to have a house meeting to decide how they're gonna decorate, and I'm like, the set is fully decorated already.
Like, where did all that stuff come from?
You guys, like, there's posters up already. Like, I'm like, what? You guys couldn't even like redress the set for the scene.
Yeah, you couldn't have emptied it out to make that logical.
Yeah, like the cupboards.
Good observation.
In the little kitchenette area, that's basically the color palette that I'm like referring to. They're like these kind of tacky things that were probably from IKEA from the like early 90s, and they're like each cupboard door is a different shade of this ugly kind of weird like muted pastel, and that's basically what they're like, okay, we're just gonna like choose all of the wardrobe based on these colors.
They really wanted them to be able to camouflage into the walls if they needed
to.
What about that random shirtless scene?
Yes, that was very weird. I found it off-putting.
Like doing bicep curls shirtless.
Yeah, and I couldn't help but notice that they were all like completely like hairless as well.
Oh yeah, that's definitely a trope.
They make a joke about that. They make a joke that like Zach only has to shave once a week and not even that basically. Yeah.
Well, you know.
But like it makes sense for Slater to look all smooth because he's like really muscular.
Yeah.
But the fact that both of them are just like looking like they've been waxed for the swim team and they're just doing bicep curls shirtless with other people just walking in and out of the room.
And they had the woo track. Like they had the like woo track from the original series.
Well, I from the reactions, I would probably go on it actually being the audience reaction because they are certainly sweetened a few times. Like when Screech shows up, the crowd goes wild. And the same for Bob Golic or Golic or whatever. And until Aaron said he was a former football player, I was so confused why people were cheersing this man. I mean, who is this guy?
He's so massive. Like he's such a big dude, like so muscular. So I had to check, and there's actually a line of dialogue that happens in the episode that references this, but it happens really like in passing. Like it really is a throwaway line about how he used to play for the 49ers. And he says to Screech, like, did your mom also used to play for the 49ers or whatever? And he says some response of like, she tried, but she got cut from the team or something. I don't know, something to that effect.
Why was a 47-year-old man the RA for,
see,
for
this
that
is where I'm
dorm.
Confused because Aaron kept saying he's the RA. I'm like, no, he said he was something else.
He was like some other
it was some BS like role that doesn't exist. But it was basically like he was the stand-in for Belding, you know? Like he was like the guy, the adult that was like ruining their fun. He was some sort of administrator that was supposed to be like, you know, and maybe originally it was written as an RA, but this guy, they wanted to cast this guy, so they like made it so that he was an actual adult.
For some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to look it up just because, like, I found it really funny. Mario Lopez is 30 in this pilot.
Makes sense.
And Mark Paul Gosselaar is 29.
Yeah. Aww, that tracks.
Yeah, so I thought that was, like, I was just like, that's so funny. Because I was just like, how old are they?
Well, when they throw the, like, big party that I make reference to in our intro... If you look at the background, if you look at the background performers, some of them look like they're, for sure in their 30s, maybe even 40s. And I'm like, this is supposed to be like a freshman dorm room.
Yeah.
What is happening right now?
Yeah.
It is clearly like the same party goers as any party on Friends.
It's funny.
Yeah.
Like it's the
generic
same gang
90s
of,
sitcom.
Like, who are these people?
Good point.
All
very
white. All white, all terrible. Terrible hair and jackets.
Oh my
dolphin.
God, so many boxy
because
jackets.
It's 1993.
So big.
It was a really hard year for tailors, I guess.
Totally. I mean,
Zach's wearing like this suit jacket that looks like a kid wearing their dad's suit.
Yeah, it's like a shy away from like the trench coat that Lloyd Dobler wears and say anything.
It's
really huge.
Bad. And like there was one shirt that I like gasped out loud when I saw it. It was like that. This like a chambray shirt where
tucked in.
Oh, it was tucked in. The sleeves
really blousing.
Yes. It was a short sleeve shirt, but the sleeves were like past his elbows. It was like nonsense. I was like, how could they put this like good looking young guy in this terrible shirt?
See, here's the thing. If you look at like any sitcom from that year,
that's
how
fashionable.
Men dressed.
It was, I know.
Oh, yeah. That's how men dressed. It didn't, like, it definitely didn't make it too far. Like maybe 95, it was sort of phased out.
Ooh.
But it made an impression while it was there.
I have to
say, that's for sure.
Like, the men's fashion was horrific. The women's fashion in the show was actually pretty cute. It was actually on point. The one outfit that I took major like issue with was one of the, you know, and this will be a bit of a spoiler, but in episode 19, which we'll get into, there's like, you know, bridesmaids, like they're trying on different outfits. But the one that was like the conservative bridesmaid dress, that is like a blazer with the biggest shoulder pads I've ever seen in my life.
The biggest shoulder
pads. That was the only bad outfit. The rest were like quite cute. But like the men, they just, it almost felt like everybody was trolling the three main male characters. Like, let's make them look as dumb as we can.
And it was so funny because like, Mark Paul Gosselaar, like he's a really handsome guy. Like, and like, every element of this show tries its hardest to make us not notice that somehow. Oh. Like his hair in the pilot is so bad. It finally, like, it's fixed by the end of the series. I noticed his hair was a lot better in the last episode.
So let's get into episode 19. In episode 19, we learn that with Kelly joining the gang, Zach's will they or won't they shifted over to his one true love from high school, and after successfully winning Kelly back, they got engaged to be married. They're like 18 or 19, by the way. The plot of this episode centers around Zach trying to get permission from the dean for them to be able to live together in off-campus housing, which is something that deans of universities definitely care about. And by a cheap engagement ring with the help of Screech, who apparently has connections, win back the friendship of Slater, who is initially unsupportive of them getting married so young. how crazy for him.
Oh my God, Slater is so bitchy about this.
Yeah, but he's the only one who has any sense.
Yeah, and yes, to continue, yes, and secure access to the university chapel to get married the very next day for some reason. So not only are they engaged, they have to get married immediately. Zach gets a ring. Slater has a change of heart and is back as his best friend. And Zach gets permission from the dean, who thinks this will potentially result in him dropping out of school, which to her is great because she doesn't want to put up with any more of his antics, apparently.
I loved that turn.
Unfortunately, they lose the chapel after the minister catches them with a stripper at an unexpected bachelor party. And the episode, and thus the whole series, ends with a cliffhanger of Zach suggesting to Kelly that they get married in Vegas. Because the show was unexpectedly canceled at this point, they managed to wrap it up with a made-for-TV movie called Saved by the Bell, Wedding in Las Vegas, which we did not watch.
We did not bother.
I almost, like, if I was feeling better today, like, part of me was like, I could watch that.
Oh boy.
The only reason I would even want to watch it is to see if they actually shot it on location in Vegas.
I think they do.
Big Wave Dave's, which was definitely not Hawaii.
I think
they did. They did. It had pretty good production value. Well, not for a TV show, not like movie production value. But I definitely have seen it
years ago, but I've blocked it out of my memory. I've seen it all. But this episode is, like, again, really weird. And, you know, it's another one of Screech's really terrible lines. When they get caught with the stripper, he basically turns to Zach and Slater and says, well, this wouldn't have happened if we hired Barney like I suggested. And by Barney, he means Barney the dinosaur, the children's... You know,
because even a nerdy or supposedly like socially awkward guy like him would possibly have ever suggested that.
Yeah, it's just it's really bad.
It's so weird. It's so weird. And there's like in the pilot, like the pilot sort of ends or like towards the end of the pilot, like it seems like Screech might kind of be coming into himself a little. Like he seems like he's clearly like the pilot makes it like when they're in college, he's cooler than they are because he's a lot smarter than they are. But I was like, oh, maybe like they grow him up a little. And then I guess when we watch episode, it's like,
he's
still a child.
Nothing.
Well, that is something that could have made this series really interesting.
Yeah.
Would be if they made a huge point of flipping it so that like, the other characters get pulled down a few pegs and Screech gradually over the course of the first season gets built up and built up. And
that would be great.
He gains confidence. And it's the way that a lot of people can reinvent themselves when they transition from high school to post-secondary education. Because you meet a bunch of new people who don't know that younger version of you. And
it's a fresh start.
They could have given him a fresh start as a character. And he
even
could,
though
like,
all your friends are with you somehow.
Yeah. But,
at the same university.
That dynamic of having...
Hey, well, it's just like us moving to Toronto.
Yeah. But like that dynamic of a couple friends still being around and still thinking of him the way they thought of him in high school, but him having experiences that deviate from that would have made for great plots. Like imagine he starts becoming really popular, but they can't get it out of their heads that he can't possibly be popular. And like they just can't believe the things that are happening to him and the way he's growing as a person. Like that would have been interesting.
I'd like to just note that Holland Taylor plays the dean in this version.
Yeah, she gets added like mid-season. I forget which episode, but at some point.
And she's like way too good for this show.
And she is like legitimately good,
but
too.
She's like
she's
cartoonish.
She is a shining part.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
she
like,
takes it like... It feels like she understood the original intention of it, which was like, oh, we're going to make this sort of a campy, silly take on, you know, with a 90s edge. But then nobody else was on board with that, you know, like she was being this cartoonish version of a like snooty dean But like no one else was going that way with their character.
Another trope that I'll note, in addition to the oversized clothing and the smooth chested shirtlessness, is this show seemed to have a lot of that. I'm going to call it the tossing the ball back and forth business. Like a lot of like a couple bros broing out and they're just like casually tossing a football back and forth indoors.
Well, yeah, you know that's a trope because Tommy Wiseau incorporated it into his iconic film, The Room.
That's, yes,
he's like,
right.
This is what all American guys do when they're hanging out. They just toss balls around.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed, like, the reboot. Take it, like, tasking them with how silly that is by like, having the one character not even realize he's always carrying a football.
Yeah, I mean, there's just like a lot to dislike here.
I like to point out also that them getting married at that age in California means they won't even be able to toast at their own wedding.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true. I also really liked that, like, you know, the whole plot is like, they're like, oh, they're too young. But like the whole time I just kept being like, ah, they're like 30.
Yeah, like, the actors were old enough. But yeah, no, that is a trope as well. And we've already mentioned this on the podcast. I think it was in the context of Muddling Through. We talked about that and we went on a like a bit of a side tangent about Roseanne. Like there's just so many plots in these 90s sitcoms about one of the young people, one of the young characters getting married too young, to the point where it seems just so implausible that there would be that many 18 and 19-year-olds in the 90s that would want to get married.
And they do it on Boy Meets World as well. And thinking back on it, I'm like, oh, but now that I'm thinking about it, they actually managed to like follow through. Because as I seem to remember, like basically they really dealt with it not being... like their lives were not good throughout all that. Like they were very poor, and they fought more, and like
there was also this weird joke reference between, I guess, Kelly and, am I getting the name right? Was it Lisa who came to visit?
Yeah, well, Lisa came back. Yeah,
who are you,
Lisa Turtle?
Who are
Aaron,
you?
Come on,
Lisa Turtle.
So
doesn't. It's so weird to think of not having these
in your
characters.
Head. Yeah, Aaron, I'm like really upset right now. I don't know who you are. I don't know who I married.
Yeah.
So the joke is in a conversation between Kelly and Lisa about how they had some bet in high school about who would get married first and how they would have to like give up on some sort of like longtime crush they had. And so they say this like tribute to Kirk Cameron from Growing Pains, who apparently they both had a like longtime crush on. And I'm like, is this meta? Is it wrong for me to assume that Mark Paul Gosselaar, his character in this show, is a very similar type of figure in pop culture as Kirk Cameron in Growing Pains?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it all kind of tracked, and I think they were being meta because they made jokes about how they didn't like the serious episodes that tried to teach them things, and that was definitely them like calling back on all the times Saved by the Bell did that. I thought it was a bit of a sweet scene. Lisa and Kelly's friendship is always very sweet. It's so, sorry, man, it's still, I can't get over this. Like, you not having these, like, I hold such, despite, like, when you watch it and you're just like, oh, you know, it really isn't that good. I have such affinity for these characters, except for Screech. Like, I really want them to do well.
If I could go back in time and trade all of the hours I spent watching Home Improvement for watching this, I definitely would do so.
Yeah. I mean, they feel like they sort of feel like our older siblings or our older like cousins or something. I don't know. It's like a weird, like all of those characters are just like so a part of our youth. Like, it's just very weird.
I have watched so many things that Mark Paul Gosselaar is in, just like hoping that he would like hit it big again.
So being that I didn't really watch the original successful series years ago, but both of you watched it extensively, it seems like if this is sort of along the same line stylistically and kind of an extension of the same, like you've mentioned all of the ways that it was different and the way they evolved the world and it's less colorful and it's less surrealist, but being that it's these characters and so many people were in love with these characters and this sort of story world and style of humor at the time anyway, why did this show not succeed? Like, it feels to me close enough to the original that why wouldn't people embrace it as an extension of the original?
I think a good answer to that would be what they did to follow up with it. Like, you know, the answer to that question is Saved by the Bell, the new class, like which aired the fall after this, and ran for longer than the original show. It ran for 7 years. I think that the concept at this point was they realized maybe the cast just they were done. I think maybe they just it wasn't playing like it used to. So they got to go back to school. They got to get back to Belding. Like, you know,
there was something about it. Yeah. It's just too flat. And then, of course, they like shot themselves in the foot and like programmed it during prime time. Like, they put this show on in prime time.
They did. You're right.
Was a really dumb move because, frankly, real college aged people were not going to watch this and adults were not going to watch this.
No,
they should have put it on as an afternoon thing because like 12-year-olds would still have watched it, you know? Like, they should have done it Saturday afternoons like they did the original series.
Right. So what you're saying is they shouldn't have tried to aim it at
older
college audience.
Yeah.
They should have aimed it at a high school or younger audience to aspirationally think, this is I get to like fantasize about going to college
because
when I'm older.
That's who watched the high school years.
Right.
Like, it was like little kids because it was like, oh, this is like what it might be like to be in high school or college. Like, it's not for the actual age group that it is because, frankly, it's way too squeaky clean for that audience. Like, it's like way too.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the cast, you know, was getting older and maybe it just wasn't so cute anymore to see these kinds of antics when the people performing them are actually in their late 20s and early 30s.
I think all of that. Programming it for older, I think you're right. I think that is definitely what was the nail in the coffin because, it was, you know, it was a silly Saturday morning thing and it didn't work in prime time. And then obviously it still worked in Saturday morning because that's what they did with the new class. And it just, it played for seven damn years. So, yeah, I'm so glad that now we get to move on to our next topic.
So, Bryn, why don't you tell us how this show connects with Friends?
So it's a really quick answer. There actually weren't that many connections. And also I was kind of, you know, I don't know. I tried to go through all the main characters, but there really were not like close enough connections, but I did find one degree connection. So Saved by the Bell, the college years is separated from the iconic sitcom Friends by one degree. So, and it's through not even a major character. So Patrick.
Oh, I know who it is.
Yeah. So Patrick Fabian, who plays Professor Jeremiah Lasky on Saved by the Bell, the college years, guest starred on Friends.
Boom.
One degree.
There you go. Nailed it. Okay.
All right.
Right on.
So what of the spinoff?
Yeah. So this one was like a little more of a fun deep dive. There's a lot to say here. So what I'll do is I'll start with the three characters that were added for this show. Anne Tremco, who played Leslie, had a few more roles throughout the 90s, but seems to kind of left the biz in the early 2000s. Kirsten Warren, who played the drama student Alex, continues to act in a lot of like supporting roles. She does a lot of voiceover. You know, she's still very active as well. Former NFLer Bob Golic, who played resident advisor or whatever he was supposed to be. He acted in a few more projects in the 90s, but seemingly kind of dropped out of the business after 97. And now we'll get into, you know, the mainstays of Saved by the Bell. So Mark Paul Gosselaar has had a very long career acting in film and television. You know, he didn't have that kind of curse of being, he'll always be known as Zach Morris, like, let's be honest. But he did go on to act in tons of other things. He had some like notable roles in NYPD Blue, Raising the Bar, Commander in Chief, and most recently Mixed-ish. Obviously, he went on to be in the reboot, which we will talk about. Yeah, he plays a lot of lawyers.
Franklin and Bash.
Yeah, Franklin and Bash. That was like another one. Yeah, he's just, he's like this, he plays this like kind of douchey white guy lawyer character a lot. Like that's kind of become his brand.
Makes sense.
Outside of Zach Morris, it's become his thing. Mario Lopez, who has also had a pretty prolific TV career, continued to act right after Saved by the Bell, the college years. He joined the cast of the short-lived Baywatch on Bikes drama, Pacific Blue.
Oh, yeah.
Which we talked about on another podcast.
Yeah, we had a fun time talking about that with our friends from the Be Watch Rewatch podcast. He was also in The Bold and the Beautiful, Nip Tuck, and, you know, a ton more. He's also done a lot of TV hosting. So I would say in the kind of early 2000s, that became like the thing he was known for. He was definitely one of those like entertainment hosts. He was on Extra and Access mm-hmm. Hollywood. And he's one of these guys who's sort of just like known as himself. And he mm-hmm. appears in a lot of different shows as like himself being an entertainment reporter. So basically anytime in a sitcom where they cut to an entertainment show or like they have a segment where it's like in the scripted show, they're on an entertainment like news show, it's always Mario Lopez and he's always playing himself.
Well, he's very charismatic. Yeah. Like he really makes sense as someone who could do like live broadcasting or something like that.
He's very likable. He's ageless,
I have to say. Like
he looks
great
like, in the,
you know,
in the
you
reboot.
Wouldn't even know how old he is. Like he could pass for like 35, you know?
Yeah. Because he must in actuality, he must be like
Yeah, I have no idea how old he is. He's
he
probably
must be like 50.
He'd be probably 52.
He looks incredible. God.
Yeah, yeah, he's yeah, he keeps it tight. Tiffany. Wow. Tiffany Thiessen. I'm sorry, she'll always be Tiffany Amber Thiessen to me. But like Mark Paul Gosselaar and Mario Lopez has had a super long and prolific career. Soon after Saved by the Bell, the college years, she joined the cast of another iconic 90s young adult show, 90210. She played a bad girl character, Valerie Malone, which was like a real departure from the very sunny and pleasant Kelly Kapowski. She's had some other notable roles, of course, on What About Brian, Good Morning Miami, and White Collar. Dustin Diamond, a.k.a. Screech Powers, continued to act throughout the 90s, but more in kind of like memorable guest star roles. It was one of these situations where he really couldn't escape the identity of being Screech Powers. To the point where he played Screech Powers multiple times. He played it, obviously, in the very first version of Saved by the Bell, Good Morning, Miss Bliss, through Saved by the Bell, the high school years, and then the college years. And then he joined the cast of Saved by the Bell, the new class, as Belding's assistant, which seems like nonsense. And then he also did a stint as Screech Powers on another NBC teen sitcom, Hang Time. He also did a lot of like reality TV. He did like Celebrity Big Brother in the UK and Celebrity Fit Club. He had some legal trouble, unfortunately, and also a couple of scandals, which are very odd. Like he had a sex tape that came out and also released a very controversial book about his time on Saved by the Bell, where it was like a very salacious take on the behind the scenes, basically implying that everybody there was like involved in drugs and they were all sleeping with each other. It was like very unflattering and a lot of people were upset about it. So basically he sort of was in like bad relations with everybody. And it just sounds like he had a bit of a troubled relationship with show business in general. And it's like unfortunate because, you know, as a young person, like he had a lot of talent. And it's sad that he passed away earlier this year in February. And, you know, it would have been nice if he kind of had some closure with his Saved by the Bell cast and that maybe he could participate in the reboot, even though he wasn't like cast in the main cast.
Yeah, he was not. He was definitely not asked to return.
So yeah. So sadly, he had a lot of like ups and downs. But I would say definitely behind Zach Morris, or maybe more than Zach Morris, Screech Powers is like definitely the most like iconic character of that cheesy franchise. Like it's kind of like what you think about when you think about Saved by the Bell.
Oh so, yeah, he was. For sure. I mean, even speaking as someone who didn't watch much of that show, I was very familiar with his character. Yeah. I mean, he was clearly the breakout character that people would talk about and imitate, and you'd see promos of him on TV constantly. I mean, it was huge.
It's really funny to think about Screech because, like, was he or did they just really want him to be? Because I don't remember everybody ever really liking Screech. But I know that they really pushed him in front of me quite a bit. He was just there.
He was always there. But it was definitely such a thing in the 90s, like the late 80s and early 90s. It was like,
well, this, like Urkel.
Yes, it's like an Urkel. It's like a Kimmy Gibbler. It's like there's always this character who's a teen or a kid. And they're kind of dorky and they're larger than life. And their whole shtick is that they're weird and annoying, but they're there. And everyone, like, it's just really bizarre because I feel like it was this weird trope of the time, but no one considered how it might impact this young actor down the road and how they would always be viewed that way and how it might have, like, a bad impact on their lives. And I think now, I hope now they're a little more careful with these, you know, what they do with these young performers.
You don't see it.
You know, it's like, yes, they can be quirky and silly, but they don't want to make them, you know, be these people that are completely getting picked on all the time and are completely there just to be like,
just
oh,
the butt
Screech.
Of everyone's joke.
Like, it's mean-spirited.
Yeah, nobody. Yeah, it's so mean. They're all so mean to Screech.
It's
all
like
the time.
A toxic relationship because apparently he's Zach's best friend, but Zach always treats him like shit. So it doesn't.
Yeah, there's like very fleeting moments that are very rare where Zach is like legitimately nice to Screech, and they stand out. That's how like
it's
rare
really
they are.
Bizarre and problematic. But yeah, I guess like I mean that's pretty much it for the spinoff. Like I will mention as well, like the it's interesting with the two creators of the original series, Elaine Aronson and Sam Bobrick. Like Elaine Aronson definitely moved on from the Saved by the Bell story world and universe after the original show. Like she is still very active in the industry and is a writer and producer on many shows. She's worked on shows like Sybil, Zoe Ever After, and You, Me, and Her, to name a few. Sam Bobrick, however, really made a meal out of the Saved by the Bell universe. He milked this franchise for everything it was worth. He was involved in every single spinoff and iteation.
Him and NBC
Brandon
president
Tartikoff.
Brandon Tartikoff.
Yeah. So this show was really like a legacy for him. So it's like, you know, good for you. Like you stick, you have a very specific vision and you stick with it, you know. Whether it's good is one thing, but, you know, it's something that has stuck with all of us. So, I mean,
it's hard to turn down a free meal, you know?
And Sam Bobrick passed away in 2019. So he's no longer with us, but he leaves behind many memories of television nostalgia and,
A TV story franchise that is now pushing into its fifth decade.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. I'll just, if I may add, just a quick little shout out to a friend of the show, Jonathan Wolf, who composed the music for this.
Of course. How could we not mention our friend Jonathan Wolf? Yes.
Absolutely.
I always get a smile seeing his name pop up.
Prolific. I love it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You never know where he's gonna pop up.
So shall we talk about the 2020 reboot?
Yeah, let's do this, because this will be the most fun.
Okay, so
longtime listeners of our show, I go all the way back to one of our first episodes. I went on a rant about how much I love this show. So
You called this early.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to talk about it.
So here's a quick description, my attempt at a quick description. This contemporary single camera comedy is a reboot or perhaps revival on Peacock based on the original series. It follows a new group of kids at Bayside High, and this time their level of privilege is actually acknowledged. Mark Paul Gosselaar is once again back as Zach Morris, but now Zach is the governor of California, and his son Mac Morris is one of the students at the school. Tiffany Thiessen is also back as Kelly, who, still married to Zach, is the First Lady of California. Zach is not a good governor. He ran for office as a scheme to get out of a $75 parking ticket, and then he accidentally cut $10 billion in education funding, which results in the closure of many poorly funded schools, including one called Douglas High. As a Hail Mary shot to try to make up for this, they send the kids from those districts where the schools closed to the highest performing and most highly funded public schools in the state. Thus, the kids from Douglas get transferred to Bayside.
Yeah.
They do. They do. Plus, you get Slater. Slater and Jesse are actually in the main
they
cast.
They are.
Zach and Kelly are just reoccurring. They're only in a couple episodes. Man, do I love this show. It was created by Tracy Wigfield, who is just an absolute powerhouse comedy writer. What did you guys think? I'm curious.
When you first brought this to our attention, like, I was aware that they were rebooting the show, and like my initial reaction was like, ugh. Like, because I do not like reboots. I'm like opposed to reboots. Like, I think it's like most of the time they're trash. But if you're gonna do a reboot, this is how you do a fucking reboot.
Yeah.
It takes a lot for me to drop an F-bomb on this podcast.
True.
But
it does. It does.
I was quite skeptical of it, but I was so pleasantly surprised and like obsessed immediately. And I told Aaron, I'm like, so this is like legit good. And then you didn't really believe me and you were like avoiding watching it. He was like putting it off, and then he started watching it and he was laughing harder than I was at it.
So you both told me so, you know, as someone where like as I said, the original series never quite gelled with me. This one had me within 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I watched more than the necessary amount for us to review it for this podcast.
Yeah, we're going
to
clearly watch the rest.
And I plan to watch the rest. It's a solid show.
Yeah.
Whether you're familiar with the original series and its characters or not, this is a solid TV comedy.
Yeah.
For any age.
Yeah. Truly. Like, I think it's brilliant in that it can stand on its own, but like, it also... like really has so much funny commentary for all the 30 somethings who grew up watching Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, and in a way that's not, it doesn't feel like sort of squeezed in and tacky when they make references to the original show and the original characters.
Yeah.
all those sort of meta jokes land so perfectly.
You know, it's like clearly, clearly it was going to be awesome if you look at, like, what I should have done is looked at the list of writers, like, before watching. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you know, in prepping for the episode, I looked at it, I was like, well, this is why it's so good. It's like, there, it is a stacked room. Like, it is full of really hilarious writers. You know, you've got people that have worked on like 30 Rock, people that have worked on The Mindy Project, The Good Place, like, you know, King of the Hill. Like, it is like a who's who of comedy writers. And they're all probably, like, you know, under the age of 45. So they were like the age to have grown up watching this. Mm-hmm. So they have the nostalgia of the original series and the comedy chops to like make something that's like really funny. And that's very like clever and timely. Like, there's actually a lot of really good commentary about.
And even the like jokes, like when I read the description and the whole thing of Zach becoming governor, like, yes, that sounds silly if you haven't watched this show, but when you watch it, like, that's one of the funniest parts of the show. And it really, like, there's even a line he says, I think it's in the first episode, where it's like a very quick passing joke that you'll almost miss if you're not really paying attention. That's like a reference to making fun of like Governor Schwarzenegger, almost as if like, oh, don't believe someone like me can become governor.
It's such a fun reinvention of like all of the characters. Get like the older characters all get a really great chance to shine. They're all very funny. Like Slater's
the best.
He is so funny.
Slater trying to win over the football player from Douglas killed me.
But he wasn't a football player.
Well, he wasn't a football player, but Slater thinks he is or like wants him to be. But yeah, so there's this one kid from
Devante
from Douglas
who
High.
Who is also amazing and very funny.
Tremendous performer, like powerhouse performance in every scene he has.
Oh, yeah.
But the scenes between him and Slater are so amazing because it's really making fun of all that classic crap that would happen, especially in the 80s and 90s, but still happens today, where there's sort of like a white savior character that's like the white teacher who's trying to like help out the underprivileged kid who's like a person of color from like a so-called like underprivileged neighborhood. And they do this commentary so brilliantly. And even the thing where he like sits backwards on the chair.
And he's like, wow,
I've never seen that actually happen before.
Yeah. So the actor playing Devante is Dexter Darden, and he's like so, so good. And and like that, there's that beat where he's like, well, technically you aren't a white savior because you're Mexican.
Yeah, and Slater's like, thank you for acknowledging that. You know, a lot of people never pay attention to that.
They never talk about that. Yeah.
Every line is so brilliant, like, between the two of them.
Where they're like, I saw you eating soup in your car. And he's like, that was melted ice cream. And it's like, he's just so like sad.
His relationship with Jesse is so funny because like she basically I know we had an HR meeting about this.
In fact one thing show does quite well is that all of the adults are buffoons, basically.
Yeah.
And
it's so good.
And so there's a lot of like kids who have really like good commentary about everything that's happening in modern society. And like a lot of the sort of most thoughtful things come from the young characters, and the adults are all just bozos.
Yeah.
But they know it. They all know that they're bozos, so it's fun.
Yeah. The young actors playing the main, like the students, are all hilarious. Yeah. Like they're all Like, they're just, their timing is like on point. And I'm like really excited to see what happens with all of them. Like,
and their commentaries about all those cliches that used to piss me off about the way kids in high school had to fit into all of these very specific archetypes. And they make fun of all of them so well.
Yeah, it's perfect. Like, I love the election. In the pilot, there's like the election storyline where the two popular kids who are played, who are basically like, they're Mac Morris and Lexi. And they're just like, they just want to run so that they get a good parking spot. And and they have to, like, one of the dumb requirements. And then Daisy is like trying to actually make a difference. She comes from Douglas and she's trying to like make an impact and make life better for the new Douglas kids, because she notices them immediately becoming marginalized when they come over. And it's like, you know, they, one of the requirements for this election is that they get their posters up by a certain time. And you see Lexi and Mac have their faces like just plastered on these like professional posters all over the school.
Yeah, and she's complaining like, how did you get these posters up everywhere so fast? And like, what, you don't have a poster guy?
Lexi is such a funny, she's a complete agent of chaos. Yes. Like, she just lives to scheme, and like, she's so, so funny, and she has all these great lines. Like, she steals every scene. I just so love the character so much.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. Josie, I'm sorry, Josie, I don't know how to pronounce her last name. I think so too. She's very involved, and she's involved in the writing, and she's a producer on the show as well. So she clearly has a lot to say about her character, and I love that.
Yeah, it's so funny when like Daisy is calling them like Mac and Lexi out, and she's like, you know, it's you know, it's obvious that things only work out for people like you. And then Lexi's like, oh, you mean like hot kids? She's like, privileged kids.
Privileged kids.
Yeah, there's,
right.
There's no filler dialogue or expository dialogue. Every line is a joke or a commentary or something that like advances things.
Yeah, you get people who've written for The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. It's like every line is a joke. It's like joke, 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 joke.
It's not stacked bad.
So it's like, you know, it obviously the same thing is going to like come over to this like show.
Also, what's his name who plays the principal?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. John Michael Higgins.
Perfect.
Oh, he's always
great. He's always great. He's always like spot on in this role. It feels almost like he's so pathetic as the principal.
Yeah.
Like, it comes full circle into being charming, but like, he's almost like a character out of a sort of Best in Show or Waiting for Guffman type of movie. Yeah. Like that kind of character.
I'm going to make a bold statement and say he's better than Belding.
He is. Man, yeah.
Yeah. It's very good.
And like, his character is a great comment on Belding in general. Like, they just push him around. Well, everybody uses his office.
When Mac goes, I've thought of a solution to this parking spot issue. Like, we just want you to take Ubers to school from now on, and we'll take your spot. And he goes, my car is already an Uber.
there's a scene where Mac is sitting in his chair, and he has some line where he's just like, I don't want you to be so comfortable in here.
Get your feet off my desk. Oh, okay. Can I flip over your garbage can and put it up on that?
So we watched the pilot, which already like got Aaron and I like very excited.
It slays.
Yeah. And then we watched episode 8, and it was just like more awesomeness where, you know, they're planning this like fundraising gala, and like the whole storyline of the principal actually having gone to school with them, and they don't like Zach and the gang, and they don't remember him. and he's trying so hard. And then they do all the weird like flashbacks to the original series, and they've inserted him digitally into all the scenes.
Oh, yeah. That was, they basically forced Gump him into like archival footage. Yeah. It's so funny.
It's so weird.
And I think, I'm sure you guys were, it's the same as me, is like, I expected like basically the payoff to the joke be that maybe John Michael Higgins was in an episode of Saved by the Bell, and they were gonna cut to that. And the fact that they just hilariously, obtrusively inserted
and
him
in a way where they could have clearly even done it more seamlessly, but they wanted you to know that it was CGI. Yeah. Like they wanted you to know it was fake.
They just put a wig on him. Like they put a wig on him. They didn't de-age him at all.
It
like,
was very funny.
It's very funny.
And then they got like, we got a moment where they called back to their iconic episode from the original series where they're in a band together. It's like Zach's fantasy. And it was the most, I remember at the time even thinking it was the dumbest thing ever, because it was like, what is this music? And why are they wearing sequins?
Yeah.
Like it was this weird music that was like not even of the time. And they, and then they like, they call back to it, like these like 40 something year old versions of these characters revive this like little act, and as a whole way to like show Higgins that they love, like that, oh, we are friends, like we're, they try to like, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's also, so silly. Yeah. And then he's mad about it. He's like, all I wanted you to do is like take a selfie with me. Like we can't even like show I don't remember what the line
is. And the episode opens, the pilot opens on, like initially the first moment, I was a little worried because it opens on this sort of classic multicam kind of cheesy sitcom setup. But like just shot in a modern way. But like the first scene felt like it was trying to recreate the original series just like today. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is this what the show is? But then, of course, it turns out that that's just like a fake out before it kind of record scratches into like the reality of what high school actually is like. Yeah. And did you notice that in that sort of fake lead-in preamble scene, they were like twins that walked by? There's like a twins trope that they made fun of.
Yeah. The pilot also, they reintroduced the Max. they all still go to the Max. It has my favorite line, because like we go here every day, you know, after class, between classes. You go to a sit-down restaurant every day. Isn't that expensive? Like,
and Max goes,
yes. And I also like that, you know, Daisy is truly like the protagonist, and that the breaking the fourth wall is Daisy instead of like the Mac Morris character.
Yeah. And in terms of like the commentary on contemporary issues, there were some really good ones. And one of them was like, so of course, the school Douglas was shut down because of all the funding being cut. And there's a couple of really good jokes that come out of that, where one of them is like a PTA meeting type of thing where the parents of kids at this high school at Bayside are worried about the kids from this like low income neighborhood coming into their school. And there's someone in the audience, some parent, who makes a comment about worrying that there's going to be some sort of criminal element or something. And the principal's like, need I remind you, sir, that you are currently being indicted under criminal charges for embezzling money from a nursing home? Amazing.
It's really good. There's like a lot going on, and it's all I'm like here for all of it. Like it is like very, very funny. Like I love the beat when, you know, Daisy is like giving a very like impassioned and genuine speech at Douglas before it shuts down, and like the principal comes in, is like, you know, this is no longer a high school. We're shutting this down.
Shut it down.
You know, and he's so casual about it. Like, it's like not.
Yeah. And then there's a line there.
He's like, you guys will be fine. You could just Google everything these days.
And then there's a line where it's like, someone's like, well, what's going to happen to this place? And they're like, oh, this will probably eventually be used as a set to shoot like scenes about high schools for TV. And I had to think, I'm like, I bet they actually shot this in a shut down former school because it looked like an actual school, like a way too big of a set to have built from scratch.
Yeah. Well, it was. Yeah.
I liked the gag where they're talking about the library at their old school, and it was just a Bible and military.
Yeah. Oh, man. But it was funny how the principal came in and his like whole line was, "This is no longer a high school, okay? This is no longer a high school. Everyone, clear out." They're like, "What?"
So. In conclusion, I think that's a heavy endorsement of Saved by the Bell 2020 reboot from all three of us.
Yeah, everybody who hasn't seen it yet, do yourself a favor. Just
don't sleep on it.
Just go watch it. Don't be skeptical. It's amazing. And like, bravo to the selection of the writer's room. Like, it's masterful. Like, it is like it literally is a who's who of like hilarious people. And it's a diverse group of writers as well. So you can feel that, I think, in the script, you know, you can feel that like the commentary is like, well done. Like, it comes from a genuine place.
Yeah.
So.
And you can tell also because of the level of specificity in a lot of the jokes.
Yes.
There aren't like jokes that are just sort of vague, generic swings at things. They're like very, very specific, poignant jokes.
Yeah.
So one last thought, I am kind of curious just before we close out, whether Mr. Producer would have any thoughts on Saved by the Bell, the college years, because it does seem like the kind of thing that would have come out of his oeuvre.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, let's try to get him on the phone.
You've reached the personal and confidential answering service of Anthony Producer of Genuine Class Productions. I'm currently away attending the 1993 television, radio play, and crossword puzzle Artisans Expo in Tulsa, Oklahoma. If your message is urgent, please reach out to my assistant, Jeremy, and he will provide you with a fax number with which to reach me. What? Yes, Jeremy, I'm sure that is the most efficient way to reach me.
All right, well, until next time. That Was a Show is created and hosted by Bryn Burney, Andrew Barry Helmer, and myself, Aaron Yeager. It's a production of Radio Gizmo in Toronto, Canada. Subscribe, rate, review, and share. Follow us on Instagram and tell your friends about it. That Was a Show.
Radio Gizmo.